It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 306. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. If you have any question, any tech question or suggestions for any show topic, you can email me. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message, and we have one queued up for tonight. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/MikeTechShow. You'll be able to see when I'm posting up the show, when I'm going live, any appearances or anything that I'm doing, anything relating to the Mike Tech Show. Occasionally, I'll throw in some things of what I'm doing, but I don't bog you down with that. I almost tweeted last night. I was at the Flyers game, and the Flyers, for those of you, just give me a moment to for some non-tech personal sports info here from the Philadelphia area. They were down 3-0 against Boston, and they have tied the series. They're going to Game 7 in Boston tomorrow night, and it is just an incredible run and very enjoyable watching the Flyers. And the reason I mentioned the Twitter tie-in is I was at Game 3 when they lost, and I tweeted that I was there, and what happened? They lost. So last night, I didn't tweet anything, and they won, so I don't know. Wasn't gonna tempt fate. As a matter of fact, I think someone responded to me and said, oh man, it's okay. They asked me for a prediction of the score on Game 3, and I did. A lot of people, you know, direct messaged me back, you know, saying we're gonna hold you to that, and of course, you know, they lost. So enough of that. Let's take care of some business, and I will get right to the show, where I am going to talk about an exchange issue that a listener, Winston Wolf, helped me with this morning, which was great. Saved my client. Something that I totally forgot about, and he reminded me. I'll talk about that and put the link up, and it solved a big exchange problem. Two, I have a printer problem for a client that is just driving me crazy. And I am going to talk about that and tell you what I've done, tell you what I'm going to do, and then I'm soliciting suggestions. So when you hear this, you know, over the weekend or whenever you hear it, Tuesday, I'm going to be at my client trying to resolve this, and hopefully I'll be able to get some ideas from you so I'm going to be able to solve this problem. And then there's an Ubuntu problem I ran into with the new Ubuntu running it in VMware Fusion. So I'll talk about that and the fix. And then I have a voicemail and a couple emails. So let's take care of some business. GoToMeeting is the best way to meet online, hold meetings, give presentations. If you have an important business contact, whether you're in LA, New York, anywhere in the world, and you need to meet, you can save money on travel and expenses. And for one flat rate per month, you can hold unlimited meetings online. It's simple to go to, one click, go to gotomeeting.com. A simple click, they can join the meeting. It supports voiceover IP, great tool set to help you present your information and anything that you're talking about. I use it all the time. I don't know how I would accomplish some of the meetings that I've held without GoToMeeting. It is an incredible product. You've heard me talk about it so much. Why not give it a try? And you can kick the tires, play with it, and see all the features that I've been talking about for 5 years. And you can get 30 free days. But you got to do one thing. You got to go to gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. to get your free 30-day trial. First up on the agenda, I get a panic phone call this morning from one of my clients, Exchange 2003. They have Small Business Server 2003, so they're running Exchange 2003, and Exchange stopped working. They couldn't get into email. I quickly connected via LogMeIn, remoted into the server, and looked at the event logs and discovered one event that I had not noticed before that said they're at their 18 gig information store limit. And I said, wait a second. They have Exchange Service Pack 2. I inherited this client that already had, you know, it's about a year old, and they've had Exchange Service Pack 2 on it when I started helping them. And I was like, wait, the limit is 75 gig. I know, I remembered that. Well, a quick call to Winston, I mentioned, and he said, Mike, even though Service Pack 2 is installed, I bet you the registry entries were not made that allow you to then set the database maximum size at 75 gig for the private and the public information store. And I was like, wow, I just totally forgot about that registry edit. And you have to manually go in and make these two changes. And then you got to stop and start the information store. And then it takes effect. And then you can check in the event logs to see that it took. I made the two registry entries. It was easy to find online. I'm going to have, that's the first link for the show notes. Once I made that change, I then stopped and start the information store. But before I even began that, I called my client. There's about 10 or 12 users logged in. I said, tell everybody to just log off because I'm going to stop and start the information store. So everybody logged off. I then stopped the information store, started it, went to the event logs, looked for the event that is referenced in this knowledge base article from Microsoft, and it said the database limit is now 75 gig. That is the limit on Exchange Standard. Now, if you go to Exchange 2007 or Exchange Enterprise, the Enterprise version of Exchange has an unlimited information store, but it's also significantly more expensive for the licensing. And certainly if you only have a few users, where my client, they've had they're only up to 18 gig and they've had this for a few years. So certainly setting it to go to 75, we've positioned ourselves with lots of room for growth and not a problem. It's interesting that I talked about, I think a few weeks ago, implementing an email retention policy for this client, where certainly they were getting some messages back and some space. But recently, they've had a few projects with lots of big attachments happening, and it quickly consumed all the space. That's why a storage retention policy, a storage implementation policy, guidelines for your users are very important on what they should be doing with big attachments. And you got to make a decision. Do you want your information store of your email to house all that? And then you got to be prepared with all those issues. Or you got to decide, hey, I want this just on the regular network with their home directories or somewhere's on the shared area on the LAN where they access their info. The storage has to go somewhere, and you got to make sure what is the best place to manage that, because it's going to grow. You have no control over this storage. That's one thing. You know, it's like, two things you can count on. What's it? Death and taxes. Well, storage growth. Let's add a third there, because I don't know of anybody where the storage goes down. It's always going to go up. And what we have to do as IT professionals, consultants, IT support, administration, how do you manage the growth? How do you budget for it, manage it? How are you going to control it? And I could probably have several shows just on that topic. So anyway, I thank Winston for that great quick help this morning. And that's what's nice, having friends that have the same shared experiences where you can collaborate. You know, Winston can pick up the phone and call me anytime. I certainly trouble him enough on issues because, you know, it's great to have a collective where you can reach out for someone that has different experience where you can tap that knowledge, and it's tremendous. And I really appreciate it. And that's why I try to arrange, but, you know, if I can, to compensate by throwing Winston some business, that's awesome. It's great to have partnerships and collaborations with other users, so other people, so you can pool your knowledge, and it just gives you access to that much more information to be able to solve problems for clients, friends, family, whoever it is. Now, that leads into my next issue. This is a problem with a client, and it has been driving me crazy, and it's just such a simple thing. Wait till you hear this, and I'm sure you have been there. They have a printer that's an HP 2015D. It's connected via USB to a Dell workstation running Windows XP Pro. It's a peer-to-peer environment, and all of a sudden, the two other people connecting to this and the user where the printer's directly connected stop printing. So I go over the standard troubleshooting, and I'm going to let you know what I've done and to what lengths, and I've not been able to solve this. The first thing is the printer functioning. So a self-test prints great. No problem with the printer. We've rebooted the workstation. We've rebooted the printer. As a matter of fact, they've done that before they even called me. Now I get into, well, let's try a couple things. Let's stop and start the spooler. No. Anytime I go to print a test page, it says test page cannot be printed. So we're like, okay, let's try a different USB port. Same problem. Let's make sure that the printer is truly working. There's a user that has a notebook, brings the notebook over to the printer. They plug the USB port into it, comes right up, prints, no problem. Well, what if the USB ports are bad? I try other USB devices. Now, I'm doing this remotely over the phone. They plug in different things, and I'm logged in via TeamViewer, and I can see the different devices that they're plugging into these USB ports. So we know the USB port's good. We know the printer's good. Now, Microsoft Small Business Specialist says, is the file and print sharing open on the workstation firewall? That is an affirmative, yes. I checked that. I went to some greater lengths than that. I tried reinstalling a new driver, PCL6 driver. No luck. Discussing this with someone, they recommend it, and this is another day where I try to fix this. How about going to the PCL5E driver? I try that. No luck. I figure, okay, we're getting a little more serious here. So I even try, after Googling this, SFC, so the system file checker with a slash scan now, I go through that whole process. On reboot, it does a check disk, processes everything, everything's clean, no problem. I download the HP Print Diagnostic Utility, which I'm going to have a link to. Now here, it bothers me because it actually does not list the printer. So I'm like, I can't believe this. So I've tried multiple drivers. I even removed the USB printing driver from Device Manager and reboot it and let that reinstall. No luck. I got to figure somebody out there listening has been through this. What have I missed? What else can I try again? What else can I do to fix this? There's a couple things I'm going to try when I go out there on Tuesday. There's some other clients I have to visit in that building. And even though this is not a serious problem, that's why they said that it can wait. I'm going to be out there on Tuesday. I'm going to try creating a new account and then go in and as a totally different profile and see if that helps me. Uncle Al in the chat said, did you check the services? That's an affirmative. I tried that. Vince mentions, what about the antivirus software? And you know, they use Symantec. I have not disabled antivirus, but I am going to do that and see if that helps. It's always smart to, when you're troubleshooting, check the firewall, check antivirus or any internet security suite that could be stopping you from doing whatever you're trying to do. That's always great advice. Also, I've seen unregistering and re-registering the MSIEXEC. That's the installer, the Microsoft installer. So we're going to re-register that. We're going to see if that helps. So you can see where this little nagging problem is just driving me crazy on this HP 2015D printer. I am going to try, Randy just said, try safe mode. If you have an idea, I don't care how you may think, oh, it's so obvious or something. What I want you to do is email me. And even if you heard this podcast way after and I'm able to solve it for some reason, when you have ideas on solving printer problems, send it my way. And what I would like to do is just put a paper together recommending all the things to do for printer troubleshooting. And then I will share that with everybody because there are so many things that you can try that are simple right in front of you to try to fix the printer. And especially since we know the printer absolutely works and prints. So it's definitely something within the operating system because we know the ports are good. We know the cable's good. We know the printer is good. It's definitely the operating system level. What can we do to keep for checks and have a nice checklist? And then we'll have the printer support checklist. And I will share that in a couple weeks after we put it together. Karante, chipset drivers. That's a good idea. Interesting about the chipset drivers. I tried to apply that and it would not install over top of itself. Two things. One, I really like what Ken said. Mike, maybe you have to be there. He is absolutely correct. Yes, it was after Patch Tuesday, and I'm wondering if there is some patches that I may have to back out that might have interfered with this particular system. That's a very good possibility. I like the idea where, although I'm having people try different things, now sometimes maybe I'm not getting all of the information back. So when I'm on site and I try it myself, some of these things that I can just blow through real quick, I might get different results. So I am looking forward to doing it myself when I'm on site. Nothing can replace seeing it with your own eyes, touching it with your hands, because that's the one thing that's very difficult doing this remote. It's very hard to troubleshoot. All right, so send those in to me, all those suggestions. And what I will do is, again, I'll put them together and make a nice list, a checklist that you'll be able to use for any time that you have a problem. And maybe one of these things that we've went over, it's going to fix your problem. Last week, I installed the new Ubuntu 10.4 under VMware Fusion. Again, another frustrating problem. How would you like to have it totally installed and you try to log in and at the login screen, you cannot type your password that you picked? No matter how you try, the keyboard will not respond. And I absolutely know that the keyboard works. Well, doing a little Googling, we find there's a known keyboard problem with Ubuntu 10.4 login with VMware. And I will have a link to this article. And you have to, in order to enter your password, you have to activate the universal access preferences for an on-screen keyboard to type it in. And you have to check, use the on-screen keyboard. Then you have to reboot. And upon reboot, you will get an on-screen keyboard that you can use to pass through your password to log in. Now, once you log in, you're home free. But every time you would reboot, you got to use the on-screen keyboard. That's the way, the workaround to get in. Now, once you're in, there is a fix. You have to run sudo dpkp-reconfigure /console-setup. And once you do that, you follow the on-screen instructions, reboot, and you're good to go. So there's a fix. So we have the workaround and the fix. It's nice when you run into a problem like that that's very well documented on the internet, and it makes you feel good when you find the solution, because, boy, that was just driving me crazy. You're getting a little taste of my week where I have had little annoying problems with clients and then little problems for myself. And that has been happening every day, and it gets very frustrating. I've been like living in Google, just searching and searching for all these solutions. So I figured I would share some of the solutions with you and also share some of the problems, so to solicit your help. So that's what I love about the show and doing the show, the collaboration with all of you that's listening. I have a question that was sent in via voicemail from Mark. Give a listen.
Mike, this is Mark in Dallas. Had a question for you. Is Windows XP still being supported with security patches? I thought I had heard on another podcast that it was no longer the case. So if you could try and help me double check on that and verify whether it is or is no longer being supported with security patches with automatic, you know, Windows Update, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Mark, I have a chart from Microsoft that puts specific dates down as to when the end of life is for, just to give you an idea, general availability date, the mainstream support when it's going to be retired, and then extended support retired. Now, the extended support is geared at the corporate world. So now, in the chat, they're saying it's been extended, and maybe this knowledge base article hasn't been updated. So there's a lot of confusion, possibly, and certainly Microsoft has to understand they have so many copies out there in the corporate world that they may be forced to extend it. Now, of course, they want you to upgrade, but a lot of companies, to go through an OS upgrade like that, it's very difficult. If they have old hardware, they're going to have to get more memory. They're going to have to get new systems. I have a client that I'm working on a proposal right now for new server, an upgrade, and all new workstations. But a lot of people, a lot of companies can't afford that in these times. Understandable if Microsoft extends the support life. I would say safely, you do not have a problem through probably most of 2011. After that, it's kind of iffy. So if you're not, I would say you're a home user, XP, you know, how old is your system? You should really consider your next system purchase over the next 12 to 24 months, and in there, plan on going to Windows 7. And can your hardware currently right now support the upgrade? There's utilities that you can run that will help you determine whether you can run Windows 7. But if your hardware is old, it's going to be very hard to get drivers for the new operating system. You absolutely want to consider going to a new system. Now, if you're asking this from a question for a small business, and you know, you want to make sure you're getting the security updates, maybe a call to Microsoft wouldn't hurt. But I would say, you know, start planning in next year's budget to start the migration. And you want to definitely consider going to Windows 7, because obviously you want to skip Vista. Windows 7, it's rock solid. I've been implementing it with clients in the corporate world and small businesses, and it's working great. You want to make sure that all the applications work. And that's why you want to set up in an office environment one test system and throw everything at it. All of the applications that you're even considering running on a workstation, and make sure that everything's tested and that all of the key stakeholders in the decision sign off on it and say, you know what, they've seen their programs work, they've seen the software work, everything's fine. You may have to make some calls to some manufacturers, or is it going to work or not if you upgrade to Windows 7. So it's not just buying new hardware, buying the operating system. There's a lot of work involved in making sure that the upgrade is going to be successful with all of your software. A perfect example, a while back, I think it was over Christmas, one of my clients, it's a law firm, a small law firm, they have the Needles application, which is, I believe, on the Sybase SQL database, and the one partner went to Windows 7, wants to go to Windows 7, and got him his new system. The new client that worked with Windows 7 would only talk to a newer version of the application and database. So I had to upgrade the database at the server. After upgrading the database, I now had to do a flash upgrade of all the workstations, even the ones that weren't Windows 7, because they all had to have a client update and a database update. This is all because one person was going to Windows 7. Now, what made it worth it was all of the work I was doing laid the groundwork, so now it would be easy to start plucking off users and upgrading them to Windows 7 when needed, and I wouldn't have to go through this work again. It outlines the point that I'm making, which one workstation with an upgrade of one client invoked a whole series of work over multiple weekends, and I needed help because of all the workstation work, so solicited one of my sons to come down and help me on one Saturday so we can hit all the workstations. So you got to do the testing and the planning. And I that's why I wanted to make sure that I communicate that. It's not sometimes just an easy decision. Oh, my hardware's all old. They're coming off support. You know, let's go to Windows 7. Even if you have the money, even if you have the capability to do that, you got to do the planning, the testing around bringing in Windows 7 into the corporate environment. Certainly at home, take a look at what applications you're running. And most of your applications, unless they're very, very old and maybe they've come off of end of life and they're not supported, I would make a good bet that they are going to work in Windows 7. I have not found any applications, and this is the 64-bit version I'm talking about, of Windows 7 Ultimate that I'm running right now on my desktop. I have not seen an application that I'm using. Now, if you know specifically of some applications that you know personally that they do not work with Windows 7 64-bit, let me know. And I will share that with everybody. There are a lot of programs that I haven't seen any problem with running into all the clients that I work with. Doesn't mean that there's not programs out there that don't work. I'm sure there are. And you may have to run XP virtually, which just came up in the chat, where you can run it under VMware Server, which is free, and you can install XP. I love VMware Fusion on my Macs. So there's lots of ways around that where, let's say you got a single application that you absolutely have to run and you want to go to Windows 7, and this program will only work in XP. It won't work in compatibility mode in Windows 7. It won't work in everything that you've tried. Well, get VMware Server. It's free. Download it. Install XP. Now you got to make sure that you have a little extra memory. And then install the app. And now you can run it on the system. It's a great solution to still keep you moving forward, but you can hang on to some of the legacy applications. And that's another option for you. Something to consider as part of the upgrade process. I think that's it for tonight. And I don't have any independent music lined up, so that's it for tonight. I want to thank everybody for downloading and subscribing to the show. I want to thank you for your continued support of my show by using the Amazon link and by purchasing Steve Cherubino's laptop repair videos and also his website videos for building your tech repair website. And of course, as you go to miketechshow.com, There's many other affiliate links that on the left-hand side of the website, if you use any of those vendors and you need to do an upgrade or a purchase, click on that, and a small percentage is contributed to the Mike Tech Show as a commission. Your price stays the same. And as a matter of fact, on like with the laptop repair videos, use the code MTS and you get an additional 10% off. That's it. Thank you very, very much. And I will talk to you same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.